I may ask you to speak briefly on what you've been doing, not on the substance of it at all, but just to say, put together a lengthy report, you know, and it covers A, B, C, D, and E. I'm not going to ask you to make a presentation, but just to discuss what it is in case anybody wants a copy of it, okay? According to both that clock and my iPhone, which keeps more reliable time than Darby's microwave, if you heard his story, it's 10:05, so we'll start. I'd like to thank everybody for being here. Again, if you're in the audience, we still have some seats up front, particularly if you're planning on speaking. We'll want you on the microphone. What we have been working on, what I've been working on for a long time is, I guess it's a combination of affordable housing and housing in general. And most, if you've been to the meetings, and I see we have a couple, small handful of new people here. It's my belief that, you know, the only, one of the reasons that we have such a affordability crisis is just we don't have enough product. If you're in other areas, if you're in Dallas, if you're in Orlando, and as long as you have water, if the urban core gets too expensive, yeah, just build out into the suburbs another mile. We don't have any of those. To the east, we have sharks. To the alligators, to the west, we have alligators. North and south are fully developed. There's only one direction left to build, that's straight up. If you, I assume most of you know these numbers, but our long-term population growth over the last about 25 years is about 14,000 people per year. We currently have approximately 2.1 people per household. That number has gone down each year because of more people living alone and also because of families having fewer children. So the average is around 2.1, which I'm going to round to 2 just because it makes the math easier. Not that good in math, but I can divide 14,000 by 2. Means we need 7,000 housing units every year just to keep up with population growth. I've been in government in the 1980s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s, and 2020s. I've changed a lot of laws and ordinances. I cannot change the law of supply and demand. And what I know is if we build more than 7,000 units, that will serve to mitigate housing prices. And if we build less than 7,000 units, that housing prices will continue to go up faster than inflation. So, you know, we've been working on amendments to 2.16.4, which I've heard people refer to as the Geller Amendment, to try and fix this. This predates the work that the state has done in reference to Live Local. Hi, Isabel. And what we have been working on is trying to increase density. I have tried to protect the neighborhoods, and that is one of the discussions that we're going to be having today, to what extent they should continue to be protected. But the basically, for those of you that aren't familiar, if this is your first meeting, what this does is it permits, the Geller Amendment permits residential development on commercial property, but only in the activity centers, the racks or the lacks, or the arterial roadways. And it's done that to try and protect the residential neighborhoods. As of today, I believe there are still no cities that have adopted the Geller Amendment as a permitted use, but I know that one or more currently have this in front of their planning and zoning boards. And they will benefit mightily, because the way that we've drawn this is, if you're applying for our transit surtax dollars and you're in a city that has made the Geller Amendment a permitted use as opposed to a conditional use or special exception, you get bonus points when they're doing the scoring. Okay, I had asked Gretchen Cassini to do an example for me, and she did. This was, I think, 2 years ago. The top five projects were going to get funded. She looked at one in a city that came in eighth and was not funded. If it was in a city that had adopted the Geller Amendment as a permitted use, it would have moved, the bonus points would have moved it up to four, and it would have been approved and funded out of our transit surtax dollars. And the reason that we want it as a permitted use is, you know, I know developers are very hesitant to put millions of dollars or $1 million or $2 million into tying up property, hiring architects and engineers and lawyers for something that is a special exception or a conditional use, knowing that if 30 people in red t-shirts show up, that even though the city staff has recommended it, the city commissioners have told the attorneys, sure, we're with it, and then when they see 30 red shirts, they lose their nerve and end up voting no. So again, you get bonus points for that. And as you're aware, the county has expiring CRA money. We are going to be giving that to cities. Majority of that's going to be going for them for affordable housing, but some will be going to economic development. And you get bonus points in that area if you have adopted the Geller Amendment as a permitted use, not as a special exception or conditional use. Now, you can also adopt it as a conditional use or special exception, which means you get more local control. You can decide where you want to put the residential on commercial, but then you're just not eligible for the bonus points or the transit surtax. Philosophically, I have try to do most things to give more local control as opposed to the state, which is mandating what has to occur. I've been trying to give additional tools to local government. So we've had established three subcommittees. We had one that met last week, and they met on the 10% rule. there have been a lot of developers that have said, well, gee, this is great, but we don't want to do any commercial. We really just want to change the commercial to residential. And I've said, no, absolutely not. I'm not prepared to even consider that. And the reason is people are moving to downtowns, downtown Fort Lauderdale, downtown Hollywood, downtown Pompano, because they want to be able to walk to shops, to restaurants, to bars, et cetera. And if you do away with the commercial, then you're killing the goose that's laying the golden egg. So no. However, I have been prepared. We have been discussing, and if we have time at the end of this meeting, since we have people here that were not at the last meeting, I will ask if there's any suggestions on that. We did receive a number of suggestions, primarily dealing with the what we've done. Originally, it said 10%. People said, well, it's difficult in the downtown areas because if you're building a 30-story building, 10% would require you to build more than one floor of commercial. Said, okay, we'll let you just build ground floor commercial, but if it's 5 acres or less, but you really have to do this. I'm not going to let you put most of your everything in your building, your electrical, your lobby, your this and that, so that all the room you have left in the ground floor of your 25,000 footprint is 2,000 square feet, and so you can build a coffee shop there. No, it's got to be enough to make it, you know, a restaurant, shops that will attract neighboring stores. And we do recognize you put one building in the middle. If it's the first building in the ground floor, you're not going to get the same amount of rent that you'd like. Too bad, you're getting free land to build on, essentially, because we're letting you build residential where the land use doesn't permit that. You may have to charge less rent at the beginning than you'd like to charge in order to get your 30-story building approved. But eventually, as it fills in, and now there's 20 blocks of these 30-story buildings, then there will be the density that you need to make the ground floor commercial work. Today, we're going to be focused on transit-oriented development. We've already done a lot in that area. In terms of what we've already done is say that if you are within half a mile of, again, the fact that it's only on the arterial roadways, that is transit-oriented development. But we've also put in something for train stations, and that's something that we want to discuss. But thus far, it's only on commercial. One of the questions that has arisen that will be discussed today is, what about expanding this to do residential in that area? Is there anybody here from Hollywood? Shame, because they had RSVP'd, and Hollywood, I know, would be affected substantially by this. I will give you one example, but there, as we put in the coastal link, it will affect a lot more areas. Is everybody familiar with the Tri-Rail station on Hollywood Boulevard? It is the northwest corner of I-95 and Hollywood Boulevard. Okay. Directly, I don't have a map. If I did, directly next west of that there's a water feature. It's part of, I think, something that connects to the Intracoastal. It's a lake. And then right next to that, you have a well-established section within, you know, probably 500 feet, Hollywood Hills. You have, on the south side, you have the JC Hall and the Women's Club, and then just west of that, you have a well-established residential section. There has been discussion that people would like to see as part of a Geller Amendment type issue that anybody, any residential neighborhoods there also would be eligible for high-density residential. I am currently, but I want to hear input, I am currently not disposed to mandate this because they have been trying to protect the residential neighborhoods. But currently, the cities don't even have the option, without county land use change, of making that change. And my initial thought is to give the cities the ability, but not the requirement, to make that change, because, again, I have been trying to give, I'll be honest, I don't know, does anybody hear from Margate? Okay, they had RSVP too. All right, Tamarack. I don't know very much about Tamarack. I'm hesitant to be making land use plan amendments up there and saying, all right, in Tamarack, you've got to permit, you know, I'm pretty confident in Tamarack there won't be any rail, but all right, so Pompano. I'm not as familiar with Pompano as I am. I've never represented Pompano. I've represented every city south of Sunrise, in either the House, the Senate, or County Commission. I've represented every city south of Sunrise Boulevard, but I haven't represented any of them north of that. So I just don't really know, and that's why my inclination is to give local cities the discretion but not the mandate to include residential without coming to the county for a land use change. I would also like, I've just retired as chair of the South Florida Regional Planning Council, which you normally have for a year, and I believe I, in sum total, I had 3.5 years. We are working on transit-oriented development. I've been also the chair of the SEDS, which is the Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy Committee, which is the economic development district of the Economic Development Administration of the U.S. Department of Commerce Small Business Administration. Did I get that right? Oh, not, yes, not the SBA. Okay. Okay, sorry. I added one line too many. Right. And we have assembled a group, again, unfortunately, the South Florida Regional Planning Council is Monroe, Dade, and Broward. I keep trying to steal Palm Beach, but they keep getting upset when I do that. Palm Beach is part of the Treasure Coast Regional Planning Council, which is Palm Beach, Martin, St. Lucie, and Indian River counties. We have been working extensively on TOD, and we'll be, in fact, holding a conference, I believe, on 9/11. Yes, just coincidentally, it's September 11th. But, yes, we'll be holding a major transit-oriented development conference, and I'll invite everybody here now to that. These conferences are free, but only if you pre-register. And that will be – we don't have a location yet, do we? Okay. We are contemplating doing that. The last time we did it at Performing Arts Center. Yeah. Yeah. So we may do it there. We may do it at one of the county parks. We'll let you know. If I can call on Randy. Randy DeShazzo is the deputy. And before I do that, hold on. I normally go around and ask everybody to introduce themselves. Wanted to give a couple of minutes for any late arrivals, but I'm Steve Geller. And Dawn?
Uh, Jay Adams, local owner of a few buildings.
Jim Metzl with the City of Fort Lauderdale.
Walter Duke, I represent Affordable Housing and Land Committee for the Fire Board.
John Millage, attorney here in Fort Lauderdale.
Good morning, Bob Swindell with the Greater Fort Lauderdale Alliance.
Hi, Liz Summerstein, I'm a land use attorney at Greenspoon Martyr.
Isabel Cusio.
James Spinks, Volkert, planning design firm specializing in transit, BRT, heavy rail, all that stuff, site civil, everything.
Ralph Stone, Broward County Housing.
Darby Del Sal, Broward County Urban Planning.
Joseph Sodio, Broward County Urban Planning.
Jacqueline Garcia Tiaga, Commissioner Steve Geller's Chief of Staff and Attorney.
And? Okay. And Randy, introduce yourself. And then Randy will tell you he's not going to give the, you know, 487-page report, which is a slight exaggeration, but we'll just tell you what's in it. And if you will introduce yourself, please. Are you here today as a city representative or a county representative? Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'm glad that you're here because I said Hollywood is going to be substantially affected or could be by today's. Okay. So, Randy, TOD. I'm sorry, you need to come to a mic. By the way, all of these meetings are taped. So if you miss something, you can. They are taped, aren't they? Yes, they're being taped. So if you miss something or want some information, you can go back and listen to them. Randy, introduce yourself first.
Randy DeCesso, Deputy Director, Chief of Staff, Director of Economic Development and Research at the South Florida Regional Planning Council. Under Senator Geller's leadership, we're preparing a report called the Business Case for Affordable Housing and Transit-Oriented Development. And what we're looking at is putting together essentially a series of talking points and to help to build a consensus in the greater South Florida business community about how to advocate for affordable housing in TOD especially, but also to not just look at rail corridors, but also to look at BRT and other sorts of high-use transportation corridors. What the report contains is a lot of data on what the effectiveness is of transit and what are the different challenges that face the implementation of affordable housing, not just here in our region, but across the United States. And also looks at financial tools and how financial obstacles might be overcome. So with that, what we hope to do is through an iterative process with our SEDS committee and then to bring in the larger business community to help us put together recommendations on what are the best ways to achieve our goals with affordable housing. And we'll be presenting those ideas at this conference Senator Geller just mentioned, and hopefully we walk away with tangible and actionable action items.
Thank you. Randy, last time I looked, it was 100 pages, 80 pages, some.
It feels like 100 pages, but I think it's closer to 30.
That's all?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, it took me like 3 weeks to read. No. But it is a well-researched paper, footnoted with the staff, primarily Randy, looked at least a dozen or 15 different examples, maybe more, of places around the country where TOD has been tried, where it's worked, the different models. And I think it's still in draft form.
Yes, it is.
But if you keep in touch with us, we'll be happy to share it once it's finalized.
Great.
Okay. Yep. Thank you. There's a couple of issues that I wanted to discuss today. One, now that Hollywood is in the house, Did you, have you heard, because I used Hollywood as an example, is this your, in your district, the Tri-Rail station at, okay. Well, one of the, there are two issues I really want to discuss. Number one is the Geller Amendment right now permits but does not require, because I've tried to give cities maximum flexibility, cities to add residential onto commercial properties. Now, as far as train stations or go, and Hollywood will have, and anywhere on the east, you already have Tri-Rail, hopefully we'll keep it, and, you know, at least the Coastal Link will be going at least as far as Broward Boulevard, and we hope that eventually it's going to, we're going to figure out how to get over, under, around, or through the New River and go north. There is a lot of people that are suggesting or that have asked that the county should require high-rise residential within half mile of rail stations. Some people have said it should be within half mile of rail corridors. I am not yet convinced if there's any point in having, if you're within half mile of a rail corridor, but you're 2 miles from a rail station, it doesn't appear to me that that is TOD at all. Although some people have said, well, if since the density is expected to be so great at the corridors, and they will be on areas, for example, the new proposed Coastal Link will be running along Dixie, that they think that it should be along the entire corridor because there will just be shuttles running up and down those corridors. So I'm prepared to discuss that today. But the other issue is whether or not we should expand the area from commercial to residential. And as Delma, as you know, excuse me, as Commissioner, as you know, I forget which hat you're wearing, as you know, Commissioner, in Hollywood, just northwest of the, within half a mile of the Tri-Rail station, you've got that section of Hollywood Hills, and southwest, just west of the JC and the Women's Club, you've got, I don't know the name of that residential neighborhood, and then I think you go Park East. So there's been discussion about the county should mandate that that could also have high density residential. My current inclination, and I'm glad you're here, is not to mandate that, but to say to the city, if you want to do this without coming to the county for land use change, we will authorize but not require you to do that. Some people have said that we should be mandating it, and I'd like a discussion on that. I'd also like a discussion as to the viability of, I am not convinced we're ever going to see east-west rail because of the cost. I mean, the current administration is simply, they don't believe in funding rail. They want to be, and this is not a shot at the current administration. I've taken a lot of shots at them, but now I'm just talking about factual. They don't like rail. They are trying to cut funding in general, but if they are funding transit, they're going to fund roads, maybe bridges, but not rail because they don't like rail. So I'm not convinced we're going to be seeing east-west rail, nor am I convinced, based on what I've been told, that if we do put in the light rail east-west, which is basically a trolley, that the trolley will carry, at the most optimistic projections, will carry fewer people than we will lose by closing the lanes of traffic. So we'll be in transit hell for 15 years, and then when we're done, we will be transporting, my unit of measurement is BIS, butts in seats. we'll be transporting fewer butts in seats if we do light rail while closing one lane of traffic each direction down Broward than we are able to transport now on Broward. So I doubt we're going to end up doing that. So the question is, if we dramatically increase the buses, including the express buses, and add more bus larger facilities there, because we would need, in my opinion, in order to make buses more viable here, we also need better bus shelters, much larger ones. So if we're going to have 15 people, you need, this is Florida, where it rains all the time and we have 11 months of summer. We have to be able to have, you know, better buses if we're able to get buses running every, Randy, I think you said there's some cities in this country that run them every 7, 5, 7, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
If we're able to do that, I think we'll be able to transport a lot more people. But again, we will need better security on the buses than we have now. They're already being improved. They're a lot cleaner than they used to be, but we still need, just a quick question. I'm going to ask by show of hands, how many of you have been on a Broward County transit bus in the last 2 years for transit, not for a demonstration or just to show something, but actually to get someplace? Raise your hand. That's one of us. Okay. Thank you, Jesse. I'm sorry? I've never been on a... Yes, that's about the last time I did. Actually, college. Right. That was then. The fact is that what we will have to do in order to get buses working better, by the way, and I've been talking with Corey Cuff Lonergan about this, because... First of all, I can take a car. I have one. You know, there are people in Broward County that right now rely on the bus because for economics they need to. And it is unconscionable that it takes 2.5 hours to get from, I don't know, Allendale to downtown. I didn't know it would take that long. I was thinking west. I'm looking. What is that city just south of Parkland? Is that Coral Springs? To get from Coral Springs to downtown Lauderdale, take you hours. And we've got to be able to have a better grid system so you don't need a master's degree to figure out, well, you take the 7 bus to the 12 bus to the 18, and then you circle back. You know what I mean. But is that a viable method of TOD on the arterial roadways, and what else can we do? So first thing I want to discuss, these are things I'm going to ask for input. And again, as I said, my philosophical inclination is trying to give the cities the ability but not the mandate, but I am under pressure from some people who are saying, and I don't really care because I'm never running for office again, some people have said you really need to mandate everything within half mile of a train station should be eligible for, should be accessible to high density residential with or without the inclination of the city, kind of a Live Local Act mandate. Again, as I said, my philosophic inclination is to give the cities the ability but not the mandate, but I'd like to discuss that. So any... Let's focus on that first. Any comments? Madam Commissioner, since, or wait, hold on, let's, Darby.
So I'll just kind of set the stage. A handful of us have had the opportunity, I know you have had the opportunity to work in both a Dade County and a Broward County environment. One of the things that Dade County did years ago, probably about 15, maybe more, is when they redid their comprehensive plan, they contemplated various different types of POD-type districts. Now, it was much easier for them to do because, you know, half of the Dade County area is actually unincorporated, but they created these districts also within the municipalities. And then once when they created sort of these districts, and they worked with all the various different areas, because within these sort of nodes, they had levels of intensity of how many units you could theoretically achieve within these nodes. And all of these nodes would be located along either, you know, the South Dade Busway, their metro system, or their bus rapid transit system, wherever that might be. But they're spread across the entire county. And then it was from there, if it was within the unincorporated areas, they would then engage the community to discuss what type of zoning implements that they would put in place to facilitate that type of redevelopment. Sometimes it was successful, sometimes it was less than successful. And then the individual cities would then pursue that in tandem with the county, just because legally they have different relationship with regard to how zoning is applied. But central to all of that was really predicated upon this idea that they actually had the ability to potentially implement this sort of multimodal system. Because I think one of the complaints you had mentioned, not necessarily today, but in the past, where it's one thing to say, I am XYZ city, I'm going to build a TOD, but a TOD to what? To where, connected to how?
Right.
You know. So when we look at our land use map and we look at our traffic ways, we did an excellent job of building exactly what we planned to build. We did a phenomenal job at that because we built a land use map and a traffic ways predicated upon this idea of a single automobile. And so my personal opinion is, to be able to achieve the type of success you're talking about, you almost have to reimagine bigger than 216-4, but rather looking at our traffic ways, looking at our transit system to figure out how do you try to connect some of these things together. Certain areas, it'll never be that way. I don't imagine we're going to see, you know, massive buses filled up going through the ranches or Parkland. That's not necessarily the case. But where does it make sense to interlink various different nodes through a system and then drop in these types of nodes with their various different levels, let those different jurisdictions decide, do they want to go to the tiniest level, to the biggest level, and then let the market sort of decide once when they begin to implement those codes. Some will succeed, some will fail.
That's a great overview, Darby. And let me say that one of the problems that we have is density. And some people think we're too dense. The real thing is we're not dense enough. We want transit to succeed. You have to have levels of density, and you have to have places that attract people. People want to go to the beach. They want to go to the downtown areas because they work in the downtown areas. They want to go to Cypress Creek because a lot of people work. Cypress Creek is, I think, the second largest, although Sunrise is claiming that they're starting to overtake it. I don't know. But Cypress Creek and the Sawgrass Mills area are places where people go for shopping, and because there's tons of office buildings in both of those locations. So it makes sense to have transit there. But again, it's difficult to have transit from single family to, you need the collectors where people would get. It's the first and last mile problem. If you go to the Northeast, everybody drives to the train station in the suburbs, and then they'll take the train to the downtown. We're not likely going to have the trains to the downtown east-west. Candidly, we're not sure if we're going to be able to afford to keep Tri-Rail. If you've looked at the numbers on Tri-Rail, anybody want to guess how much the cost is per ride? It's currently approximately $35 per person, total cost each way, 34 and change. And of that, their fare box collection is about 10%, meaning that between federal, state, and local subsidies, they're currently subsidizing approximately $30 per person each way. The federal government has said, you know, they're stopping the funding, that they're still getting by. This is the last year on COVID funding. State of Florida said they're stopping the funding, and they're going to try and dump all of it onto local government. Well, right now, Broward, the three counties, it's divided evenly, Dade, Broward, Palm Beach. Some people have said, well, that's not fair. It should be based on population. Wouldn't affect Broward. We're the middle size and population. If they change it from a third, a third, a third, the based on population, Dade would pay more, Palm Beach would pay less, but we'd be pretty much where we are now. The total cost on that right now, we're paying around $4.5 million from Broward. We would need to increase that somewhere depending on what they're able to raise from other sources like advertising or rent. We would need to raise it from 4.5 to somewhere between 35 and 45 million a year just to keep subsidizing Tri-Rail. I don't know if we're going to be able to do that. I really, 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 really want to, because TOD, I think, is critical. As all of you no doubt have read, the state is talking about eliminating property taxes, or as I refer to it, the defund the police bill. I can't believe that Governor DeSantis wants to defund the police, but apparently he does. The Speaker of the House is talking about a reduction in sales tax from 6% to 5.25%. Broward County has told me that would cost us about Broward County, the county itself, not the cities, about $125 million a year. And this year would be the first year without any of those that Broward County is going to face a deficit. We would have about $30 million surplus, except that the state mandated that we have an elected tax collector, which the county was doing those functions for about $12 million a year. It's going to cost us $72 million to fund the tax collector, because under state law, she can charge 2% of collections as her fee, and that's what she has opted to do, and that's $72 million a year. So we start off in a deficit, and that's without the sheriff getting his massive increase that he's demanding, and that's without Tri-Rail. So I'm not sure what we're going to be able to do with Tri-Rail. Everybody, we're still talking about the Coastal Link. That will also require very substantial funding from the counties. We don't even have that in our budget, because we don't, as far as I know, and I've asked and I've been told, we don't know how much it'll even cost us yet, except a lot. So that's the good news. Okay. We need density, and we need the nodes. So, Adelma, your comment on both on what Darby had to say, but also, again, Hollywood, Pompano, you'd be one of the cities affected by this. Any of the coastal cities would be affected by this. So, do you have any thoughts?
Well, needless to say, I guess I would not want the county to mandate. I do think that cities have insight into the local community that needs to be considered. That said, I know, for example, that you use the Park East community on Hollywood Boulevard just west of 95. It's coincidentally, I just was talking with a resident there because they have no sidewalks in the neighborhood. Very similar to my own neighborhood. I was telling her my fight to try and get sidewalks. And she said, really, it's okay because we don't get very many people coming through here at all. It's very quiet. It's all right that we can walk through the street without the sidewalks. And I said to her, you know, that could change. I am anticipating that if we put high density, high rises on Hollywood Boulevard just outside her neighborhood, that there we'd hit a buzzsaw with people in the neighborhood want to keep it the way it is right now and not want to have a lot of people come through. So there is that. We'd probably have some pushback at the city level, but even so, I think it's very important for us to have the discussion locally rather than have the decision made for us.
And in Hollywood, I don't know about Pompano, but I'm going to ask you to speak next, even though you didn't volunteer. That's the problem when you show up at these meetings. In Hollywood, what the city might want to do, I have no idea, is say, what we'll do is on Hollywood Boulevard itself, that is an arterial roadway, so you currently can put high rises up on Hollywood at the discretion of the local government, unless you adopt the Geller Amendment as a permitted use, in which case there'd be a lot more money flowing into the city for your transit projects, because you missed the part where I said that the transit surtax gives you bonus points if you adopt Geller Amendment as a permitted use. But you might want to say that two blocks north of Hollywood Boulevard, two blocks south, you'd permit five-story residential. Or again, if it's left up to the cities, I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just saying, philosophically, I want to leave it up to the cities. But, you know, I want to see, again, there are people that think it's so important to be near train stations that it should be mandatory. What is Pompano? I know you're not authorized to speak on behalf of your city, but do you have any thoughts? And then I'm going to ask Fort Lauderdale.
So Pompano has one tri-rail station up around Sample Road. It's already horizontal mixed use if you look at a map. We already have the authority and the ability to do mixed use on all the commercial properties. The land use allows you to use, even before the Geller Amendment, land use allows you to use flex to make residential.
But then you run out of flex units, so you don't have to.
Say it again?
You run out of flex units.
Right, but now you've got 216.4, so you can do it without flex units. Right. And you also have 216.3, which allows you to densify in residential. So you already have the tools to do mixed use around Tri-Rail State, Tri-Rail State.
What about on the, assuming we ever do the Coastal Link?
We already have a TOC all around the proposed train station on the Coastal Link in Pompano. That was the whole reason we did our TODs in the first place up there.
Okay.
Was to do mixed use around those. And it's already maximum density that we allow in the city, which we have to apply to live local now because we created 90 units per acre as the maximum density in those areas.
Okay.
So we already have all the tools to do.
So it would have no effect on Pompano?
No, and the land use that you have the authority to control already allows it. So I don't think you have to tweak anything. You already allow mixed use and commercial with flex, and you can now use 216.4 if you want more than flex.
Right.
So I think you've already got the tools in your land use category.
Okay. Fort Lauderdale?
Same as Pompano, actually. We have a lot of our regional activity centers. We have adopted our Uptown TOD, which is up by Cypress Creek and I-95. We have the tools in place as well, and the Geller, we've been using Geller in our downtown area as well. But we have the tools in place.
Okay. So this would only affect, I know it would affect Hallandale and Hollywood. Dania, yes. So you think that this is something that might be useful in your city as long as it's optional and not mandatory, as long as we give the discretion to the city to do it without having to come to the county?
Absolutely.
For a land
I think
change.
I represent much of the area on Hollywood Boulevard, south of Hollywood Boulevard, and I every day driving through and saying, look at all this opportunity here. There's so much opportunity here, and why is it that, why aren't people coming and investing? Because there's a lot of empty land and a lot of empty storefronts right now on Hollywood Boulevard where someone could develop. Absolutely, I think it would be
there. Lovely area. I used to have an office on 24th and Hollywood Boulevard, right next to the Wings and Curls.
Yeah.
And they've done, you've got, guys have done tremendous things all up and down with the landscaping, it looks.
Matt Broward.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the Penny Surtax.
Yeah.
And then I represent the Mobility Hub on State Road 7 and Hollywood Boulevard. Lots of opportunity on State Road 7, too.
Right.
Just how come it's all been empty for so long and nobody's paying attention is what I wonder.
Okay. Are there, what do y'all think about TOD with the buses, although right now you can only use yellow amendment on the arterial roadway itself, or again, unless it's a rack or a lack. If there are buses, you know, and the county were to build larger bus stations, kind of similar to what we have, I guess, right out here on Broward Boulevard, or what they have in that Waterdale Lakes, I think. Where's the mall there? Is that Water Hill or Waterdale Lakes? What?
Water Hill.
Water Hill. What would you think of extending, treating those like rail stations? Anyone? Yes, Liz.
What's the realistic situation of losing Tri-Rail? Because if we lose that, then I think the only alternative would be to include the buses.
I can't possibly tell you what's going to happen with Tri-Rail, because if you can tell me what the state's going to do to county budgets, right now, I suspect $40 million is a very large chunk of our county budget, and that's 35 and 45 million is what we would have to spend if the state follows through on their stated plan to phase out funding for Tri-Rail over 2 to 3 years. If they do that, Tri-Rail has said they will try and see if they can find grants, but good luck. They've talked about doing things like wrapping their trains and selling advertising on their trains. I don't know how much they would make from that. They believe that they can get the state to give them there are certain, up by Cypress Creek, there's that large parking lot. They believe that the state will let them develop that land and receive rent for that land, but we don't know how much that would be. And candidly, I think the state may say, hey, if we can get this, we want the money. But I don't know. I'm telling you, even under our current budget, if Tri-Rail can't come up with alternative funding sources, the entire amount we're putting into affordable housing right now is 20, 30 million a year. Is that correct, Ralph? This year it's 20. We've done more in the past, I think. Yep. And to come up with the funding for Tri-Rail, just to show you an example, would essentially mean we would end up having to eliminate fully our funding for affordable housing. Stop clutching your chest. I just, you know, our discretionary budget, even though we have a $8 to $9 billion budget, most of that is enterprise funds, airport, seaport, water. We have roughly $1.92 billion general. The sheriff gets over half of that. And then other county constitutional officers get money. And then, you know, parks, libraries, functioning of counties. By the time you're down to our discretionary numbers, 50, 60 million, somewhere around that, 70 maybe. And know, like I said, affordable housing gets a big chunk of that. I don't know where we come up with another $40 million a year. Now, if it went from 5 to 10, we could find, we wouldn't want to, but we could find another $5 million. Could we find another $10 million, maybe? I just don't know how we find another $35 or $40 million. Maybe we'd have to, maybe we could, you know, fund that from surtax. I'm not sure if we legally can, because, again, it's not all in Broward. The Broward surtax, I'm not sure how we do that on a regional transit system. So I gave you a thorough, I don't know, answer to your question, but you see the issues.
I see the issues. I guess just the main concern, which I'm sure everybody knows, is the effectiveness of this policy to encourage affordable housing. If it's centered mostly on location to tri-rail, if we're encouraging development and density based off of a system that may not be in place in the future, what are we going to do with those people? And then how does that impact the community when you're trying to get a project approved? If they know that this system that's supposed to support the density doesn't exist, then you still have the concerns of traffic. So the longer, that's the long answer of saying perhaps we should include
I have bus. A good answer to that, which is shh, don't tell anybody. Right, particularly on when you're saying that on things that are being taped in public. I don't really have that. I mean, the best answer I can give you, and we may need to see what can be done in terms of the problem is the amount. If we are telling people that the voter that it's going to be, we need to subsidize people, Broward County, $60 per round trip. It's just an awful lot of money for us to be. I mean, there are no, I am not aware, does anybody aware of any transit system in the country that is making money that is able to exist on farebox? I'm not aware of one. And another answer is Brightline. You know, I believe with all of the things that Brightline is doing, their trains are full, they're heading up to Orlando, they're doing great. They lose money every year. I am convinced that Brightline was never a transit play, it's a real estate play. They are building a lot of developments of density right around the Brightline stations. And once enough people have moved into these buildings, they're going to come to us and say, we tried, you know, we tried, but we're losing money every year. We can't keep doing it. If you want us to keep doing it, you're going to need to subsidize us. And if they had done that before, we would have said no. But once there's 10,000 people living within walking distance of the Broward Boulevard station and, you know, the one that will be built at Broward General and the one that will be built in Hollywood, and we have 15,000 people trying to get into our county commission chambers carrying torches and pitchforks, which will be after I'm gone. You know, at that point in time, I'm convinced that we're going to have to find a way to continue to fund it.
And by the way, just real quick, a couple of facts, I think they last year lost $550 million. Their last tranche of, I think, $1.5 billion was at 12%, which is junk.
Right.
And now they're $3.5 billion in debt. I mean, I don't know where this is going.
I don't know
how you could bail it out either.
Well, it's easy. What they're going to do, those are bonds. They're going to default on their bonds, and they're going to say, all right, we're going to have a new corporation known as Son of Brightline, and we will run this as a private company, but we need you know, for Broward, we need $50 million a year from you. Dade, we need $80 million a year from you. And see, the problem is that the level of service there is not compatible with government funding. I mean, the tickets there, I mean, as everybody here, I know that we've established that only one of us has taken a Broward County bus in the last couple of years. Brightline. Right. How many of us have been on Brightline? Okay. Yeah, see, all of us have been on Brightline. It's completely people that won't get on the bus will get on Brightline, but it's a lot more expensive. I'm sorry? No, when I've had meetings in Dade County, I have taken...
Work-related, I travel back and forth.
Yeah.
I use it to go to Orlando. It's easy.
Yeah. But you've been on Brightline. I've been on Brightline 6 times, 7, 8 times. When I've had meetings in Dade, and I'm coming from here, it's so much easier instead of I just walk across the street, get on the Brightline, go to Dade, hop on the one station on Metro Rail. I'm at Dade County Government Center. It's so much easier than driving. But it's, you know, what, depending on when you buy your ticket, $30 each way. To one point, they quoted me last minute, was like $70 a ticket each way. So I just don't know. But again, I don't think Brightline cannot stay in business without government subsidies. It can't. And I don't think they can get government subsidies for their, you know, and keep their level of service up. And if they let their level of service drop, then you won't get the same people going on it. You were going to say something.
I was just saying that the business community does take Brightline. It's from a user experience.
It's wonderful.
It's wonderful. If I need to go to Miami, I can jump on Brightline right here in Fort Lauderdale. I can work the entire time.
Right.
Got Wi-Fi, got everything I need. And that's one thing I think from the bus experience that's lacking. I think more people would ride a bus if some of the technology was there.
Do you know that many of our buses currently have Wi-Fi?
Yeah, Wi-Fi? Okay.
Nobody knows it yet.
That I didn't know.
And the buses are a lot cleaner. And what's going to end up after we're going to have to make them look different. But sir, all of the express buses have, I mean, like Brightline, they have, you know, trays and reclining. But even on our regular buses, what's going to have to happen is people in this room are going to need to do ads saying, oh, yeah, sure, I take BCTA all the time. Because right now, there's a class assumption,
right,
that people in this room don't take it, that only poor people take it. And we have to overcome that, because that's not the case everywhere. It's not the case in New York.
I agree.
So I just will offer that I grew up in Chicago and that I didn't need a car for 18 years living there. I could go anywhere I wanted. I could even go out dancing at night and come home on public transit at 2 a.m. and it was fine. And so to come here and not have the option was really challenging. But I do think that that's what you just said is key. It's like in Chicago, you have, you know, your business person, your attorney, and they're riding the bus right along with the construction worker and the janitor, and it's not a problem. And so we have a lot of cultural shift to make here, but until people feel safe in choosing it, as opposed to you have no other choice being what public transit is about. And I know Corey Cuff-Lonergan is working on it, but I too, you know, it's about changing habits, and changing habits is always challenging and it takes time. I've been making commercials for the community shuttle, which is available for the first time in Hollywood in decades.
Funded by the county.
I know. And so I've been writing it, and I, you know, I do think that it makes a difference when there's somebody in the community that they know who's saying, look at it, it's clean, it's, you can count on it, it's reliable, it's frequent enough that you can go to where you need to go.
But
as
it's
opposed
not.
To just something slick, right. You know, I think it makes a difference when it's somebody that people, trusted sources.
Right. But in order to make that work, we have to have, I gave Corey a checklist, basically. Number one, they have to go peak every 5, 7, 8 minutes and rest of the time every 15 at least. Number two, there's got to be an app and signs, electronic live time signs. Your next bus will be here in 3 minutes and 38 seconds. We need better security on them. We need better bus shelters.
Agreed.
In order to make them work, there's a lot of changes, but I think we can do those things.
I do too. And regardless of whether we have Tri-Rail or not, we do need to find alternatives to everybody being in their car.
Yeah. So back to, are there, because again, we're here on today on transit-oriented development, but really the 216-4 and related land use issues, not particularly transit. Are there other things that we can do, in your opinion? Walter, you always have an opinion on something. On in terms of potential land use changes pertaining to either buses or the rail? Anybody? You don't have to comment, Walter.
Yes. So I read up on this TOD, and on the first page, I think we're kind of missing something we could do now, which is make it more friendly, walkable. It should be an area that we could do right now around these areas that help promote downtown and walkability. And it's in your first paragraph like 4 times. You know, it's a vibrant,
exactly
walkable.
Why I have been opposed to eliminating the ground floor commercial, which so many developers, including you, you're not a developer, but so many people came to me and said, eliminate the ground floor commercial. And I've said, no, and I'm not negotiable on that.
Well, I'm talking about the streetscape.
Right. Okay.
So the safe streets, so you don't get run over, basically you can ride a bike from these designations would help the land value, the developers, and we could do it now. So we got surtax money, we've got the city TAM that doesn't do anything, I hate to say, but we need to do that for downtown. And we've been trying, Lauder Trails won 8 years, and it's gone one block. Sure. But it could go further. Lauder Trails, the city of Fort Lauderdale.
I'm not familiar with it.
It's a 8-year project that's gone nowhere. And unfortunately, it starts here at the train station.
Okay.
And it went one block. It's supposed to go 50 miles. So I would hope that the county could help the city call it. So that's, to me, critical for downtown is livability. And if you can't walk off the train and go anywhere, it's not any good.
One of the discussions that I know had happened was trying to build a bridge, I guess, over Broward for pedestrians, that so that they could get from the Tri-Rail the Brightline station to Government Center to the Hamarshi and the Performing Arts
Center
and stuff.
Good
like
idea.
That.
I proposed one on US 1, North US 1, into Holiday Park at the Searstown. Uh-huh. And there's room on both sides, a dead end street. And, you know, no, I can't get anybody to talk to me. I priced it. It's only $1.5 million, believe it or not, if I were to do it, for a double lane, light vehicle, all the way across, and call it $5 million. It's worth it all day long. And they do them all around the country. So, you know, US 1, you don't want to walk across US 1.
No.
And by the way, that's our largest park. The same thing with over to 2nd Street. That'd be a great idea.
Yeah. Okay. Other discussion? Darby.
Yeah, I'm just going to close it out really quickly. You know, the East Corridor, whether it's Brightline, whether it's the rail, the whatever they call the
Coastal Link.
The Coastal Link, thank you, or or Brightline, there's likely going to be some type of transit system. Your question, I don't believe, with regard to this particular meeting, really is about that eastern corridor. It's really about how we get west of 95 and how those connections are. And I'm just going to, you know, you're looking for a wrap on this.
Yes, please.
I'm going to fall back on what I said initially. It's simple enough for any of us to go and plan a TOD almost anywhere in this county. But if you have not figured out, you know, all these beautification issues and safety issues and convenience issues associated with the bus, an actual system that can connect the various different nodes that makes sense, that can rapidly get, and by that I mean maybe not as fast as, but maybe competitive with the single occupied vehicle from one node to the next node, and you need to have critical mass to do that. You know, the 216-4 works great when we're looking at our corridors and we're trying to add some density and residential population, but that's not going to really contribute to your mass transit. Not until you're hitting larger areas. And frankly, whether you have commercial on the ground floor or not, whether it's commercial on the ground floor that's facing the street and it's just residential behind it, critical mass is the actual thing that you need to hit in right. order to make those nodes work and then work in tandem with mass transit. So it's the question, I really believe, is bigger than just 216-4, and it really becomes a question of the nodes. We have some of them already established.
I'm prepared to go beyond 216-4 if you right. have other suggestions. Yeah.
Well,
there.
And
but in from a land use yeah. perspective.
Right, and in many regards, the activity centers accomplish this in some way.
Right.
But not every single one of these potential nodes would be an activity center in and of itself, and so you'd have to contemplate that. But again, it has to be in the context of how we're planning for that mass transit in the future. And that was the lead off to that was that question about, okay, well, so we just drop, you know, an enhanced bus station everywhere. Well, that's, yeah, well, we can build infrastructure, we can bridge over US-1. No one's going to walk on it, by the way, because human beings, they like the closest and simplest and fastest path that they can possibly take. They're all over the place.
Nobody. Do you remember the game Frogger?
Yeah, yeah. people play Frogger all day long. It's awesome.
I don't want to be the frog. Yeah,
go down, to South Dade and the city of South Miami. They got a bridge there and a nightmare intersection with five or six roads pulling into it, and people play Frogger all day long. but really, realistically speaking, it's about connecting these nodes. It, you know, so it's the question is bigger than just land use. It's how we connect the land use to the mass transit. And with that, I'm done.
Okay. I think I know what I'm going to do on this one. While I have a little time left, let me bring up two other topics. Number one, I'm going to briefly preview what we're going to be doing at our next meeting, which is the last subcommittee, the Beach and Coast Redevelopment one, because as it happens, the three cities that are represented here are all coastal. And secondly, if there are any other land use changes that you wanted to discuss, bring them up. But first, let me just tell you a preview on beach and coastal redevelopment. I've been saying for several years now that what we have a major problem on the beach because, well, actually, not just on the beach, but especially on the beach, because you have condominiums there that were built in general, 50s, 60s, 70s. And so they're all now 50, 60, 70 years old. And a lot of them have been kept up fairly well, and a lot haven't. And many of them are either reaching the end of their useful lives, or one hurricane, of course, even if they have been maintained well, can devastate them. Problem, you can't rebuild them because current land use permits 25 units per acre. Now, if you're doing renovations up to 50% of the value that you're grandfathered in, but once they are not, once you need to do more than just fix it, you can't rebuild. It is a bigger problem than you realize if you understand insurance. Insurance, all, you know, in, I'll use Hallandale as an example because they're not here to defend themselves. No, just joking. The Olympus condominium, no, I'm sorry, Hemisphere, which is on the ocean, half on the ocean, half on the intracoastal, both sides of A1A, is built at a density of between 150 and 175 units per acre. The residents think they're insured, but they're not, because if they rebuild, they can only rebuild at 25 units per acre. Insurance will only pay for what they can actually rebuild, not for the total value of the building, even if they have replacement value. So all of these people are dramatically underinsured without realizing it. And the banks don't realize it either. Nobody's bothered to tell them, shh. I always like saying, shh, don't tell them on televised meetings. So I believe that. Now, the other thing, though, is I philosophically, again, I do have a philosophy of don't believe that we should be increasing residential density on the beach, because I'd be fine with it if we had better hurricane evacuation, which we don't. We currently are critically short of hurricane evacuation. Therefore, I believe that we should not be increasing redevelopment, it should not be adding units to the beach, but I do think we should permit replacement of the units on the beach. Otherwise, all of these people that own units there are going to be devastated. Now, here's my suggestion, and I'd like to hear from the three cities that are here, as well as anybody else. But just briefly, because this is really the subject of the next meeting, what I'm thinking of, and you can think about this between now and the next meeting, is we should permit either the same number of units or the same amount of square feet, whichever is less. Give you an example. I'll use the hemispheres just as an example. Excuse me. Yeah, hemispheres. Just assume, and these numbers are not correct, assume that they're 100 units an acre. They're actually much denser. Assume that the average unit size is 100,000, it's 1,000 square feet, and assume that there's 2 acres. That would mean you have 200 units taking up 200,000 square feet plus another 15% for common area. Under my suggestion, you could either rebuild the 200 units, in which case they could be no more than 1,000 square feet each on average. So you could replace the same number of units with the same size. You'd have to add probably 20 feet for new hurricane standards, higher building elevation for ground floor. But you could replace the same if it's 22 stories, which it's not. I have no idea what it is, but you could replace the same 22 stories. You could rebuild the exact same building that you have, except 20 feet higher. Or you could rebuild, instead of 200 units, you could rebuild 100 units of 2,000 square feet each. I don't want them to be able to build 200 units of 2,000 square feet, because that would double the size of the building and their neighbors would scream bloody murder. Right. Okay. And yeah, give them the option of you know, whether they want to do it. And that's why I suspect what would end up happening is that they would have less units, which is probably good because it's less residents to evacuate. But also, I know that some people, including commissioners that have represent or have represented Hollywood, want there to be more that don't want to be just more expensive units on the beach, so there's a downside to that. But I think you have to let the condo will sell the land to a developer who I think gets to decide. Now, the other option, which has been proposed by the staff, not elected, staff of the City of Hollywood and Hallandale, is to say, let's say they go with what Walter has suggested, which is fewer units, but larger units. If an area from, I'll use Hallandale as an example because it's smaller, County Line Road, it stops at Hallandale Beach Boulevard. Once you're north of Hallandale Beach Boulevard on the beach, you're in Hollywood. So if two buildings get torn down and they lose some units in one building, could they move the units to a different building without increasing the total number of units on the beach? My current inclination, again, under the philosophy that I have of giving the maximum discretion to the cities, is to say, we'll let the cities decide that. If the city wants to have, as long as they're not increasing the total number of units, if they want to transfer some units from one site to another, that's up to the city. And a brief discussion, if you want, from the three cities, because this is the subject of next week's meeting. City of Fort Lauderdale, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, you have a couple of different things. You have the non-conforming status, and pretty much every city has that in their code from the 50% threshold. The beach always being a concern in our city, controversial. I don't know about if something is destroyed, an act of God, that they should be able to put back what exactly they had if it's over the density permitted or non-compliance in that respect. I don't know our city would be willing to do that. I think we're pretty sensitive on our barrier island. Could you transfer development rights? Maybe that might be an option that could be looked at as far as an option of some sort. But I think that would be a challenge for our city to get over that hurdle. Now, our city's a little bit different. I don't know. We have the Central Beach Regional Activity Center, which the density is kind of all mixed in, not a particular property per se. Individually, there might be some flexibility because there's a rack there. But I know in our city it could be a bit of a challenge to get something like that done.
Okay. Just letting you know, again, the problem is if their buildings are damaged by hurricane now,
yep.
You think that you have an issue now, wait till you have 5,000 unit owners say, yep. How are you not letting us?
We're,
our building is insured. My unit's insured for yep. 400,000, but based on the fact they can only rebuild a building, a tenth the size, I'm only getting 40,000 from my insurance company. Do you think you're going to have issues yep. now?
Wait Ocean till... Mile area is all over yep. density per our code. So I hear you.
Yeah. Pompano, any thoughts? Again, you can check with your city because this is the subject of next week's meeting.
So as far as land use policy goes, you already have a land use policy that says they can rebuild back the number of units even if they've been downsized with their land use. So that policy is already in place and your plan has been for years. Yeah.
I know.
On the barrier island, you can rebuild what you have now. That's in the plan. It has been.
County staff, is that the case? That's not... I don't believe that's the case because I know I've seen a draft to permit that, but I don't believe.
Yes, the Broward Next, we do have some language that's coming out for the coastal area that will allow
But that's in the future. That's not currently.
We do have something that allows up to, I know Pompano has done a couple of amendments to protect some of their older condos on the beach that were off of the 50 dwelling unit an acre.
No,
maximum.
This is not a Pompano policy. This is
no,
Broward
I know.
County
I know.
Policy.
I'm saying you've done that, but is it under the permitted uses, right?
I don't think so.
No, it's not in the permitted uses. I can't remember what section in. It's kind of random. It might be in the residential section, but it says you can, even if we've downzoned your land use, you can rebuild the number of units you have, or You can do more units or less units, but you have to stay within square feet, or there's a little percentage increase in the square feet, something. Anyway, you have a policy like that already. So what you're going to do.
If you can find that, please let us know, because I know that the county is looking.
Yeah.
It has proposed language. Okay. Okay. Thank you. We'll look at that, because.
We do have something in the plan. I'm sorry, I don't know if this is picking me up.
Glad you're here.
In the redevelopment in coastal high hazard areas for the residential permitted uses, it states that, such redevelopment shall be limited to the actual built density intensity, number of dwelling units and building square footage, and meet all public safety codes in effect at the time of redevelopment, including code, flood elevation, hurricane standards, building square footage may be increased by 1% for every 2% reduction in the number of dwelling units subject to local land development regulations addressing bulk, shadow, and form. I do know that we are also adding some language to this section that'll be renamed just coastal redevelopment, and it might expand it a little bit to cover some of the discussion.
Okay, does that say all redevelopment, or that's not limited to hurricanes or natural disaster? Is that correct?
It's just all redevelopment, from what I can tell here.
Glad you're here.
Coastal high hazard.
Okay.
It's not a policy. It's under the permitted uses section, the residential, and it's going to be letter E.
Because I know that we've been looking at that, and that, in fact, there's language currently pending in front of the planning council that does. What expansion? Because the expansion is what I just discussed, but I'm
right.
Not sure.
So it is going to expand it further. It's actually just in front of the steering committee as a part of the Broward Next. So it's not up for adoption or transmittal to the county commission at this point. We've just taken it to the steering committee, so it'll be workshopped very soon to all of the cities.
Well, and, let's figure out.
I can't remember all the changes right now, but I can send it out.
But let's figure out what that is. Compare that to this and see what the difference.
Oh, absolutely.
Is
we have it in strike through and underline. I just don't recall.
Okay. All right. Well, then we may not need to have any more conversation on this. Yes, John.
Yeah, just wrapping up. So as I understand it, TODs are going to go in this ordinance, 216.4.
Right.
If there's a TOD, it's going to apply, right?
Well, it already is. Okay. We've already adopted that.
Got you. And then as far as residential, does that go in or within a proximity to the station? Does that go in? Does
that
go in along the corridor? So where's the determination?
Yeah. I'm glad you asked that. Let me ask again, three cities that are here, because again, this is almost certainly going to, Tri-Rail may or may not stay in existence. I think the Coastal Link is probably going to. It will go in. It currently, it is for government-owned train stations, Brightline, because it's privately operated. It has not applied. I believe I've already made that. I did already make that change, but only on commercial. So the question that we're going to bring up at the next meeting is whether or not, or that we brought up at this meeting, is whether or not it should be expanded to residential. And my inclination is to authorize but not require, give the cities the ability. But what is the thought as to whether or not this should apply just to the train station or the rail corridor? Because some people have said that the rail corridor is apt to become dense enough that it should apply to the entire rail corridor. Thoughts? Ralph.
Yeah, Commissioner, I understand the challenge in the logic of that, but I also tend to think about the rail corridors being a lot like the commercial corridors countywide. They're old, they're used up, and they're particularly underdeveloped. And as we have no developable land,
in terms of accommodating market rate units and whatever affordable we can fit into that dynamic, I think it just makes sense to go there. Just
you think the entire corridor?
Yeah.
I agree. Miami-Dade has a density of 500 units an acre, I think, within a quarter or half a mile all the way along the railway. And I'm not saying they're going to use it, but I think it's a great tool in the toolbox. And much of the development, as you described, old, underdeveloped, you know, at least have it there to be an option. Doesn't mean it's immediately going to get developed, but I would do the whole corridor.
John?
Yeah, and there's no downside given the city, the jurisdiction. There may be areas where there is single family proximate to the rail line, which is probably unusual, but some portions of the city that's the case. But other areas the city may say, yeah, you know, let's do this. So, you know, there's no downside, I don't think, given it to the cities. And I don't know any negative land use, you know, externality from allowing, you know, high density residential on a rail line. I mean, it's just, it's extra density, doesn't harm anything. If somebody wants to live there, you know, God bless them, let them live there. If the market will absorb it, I mean, that's the whole key here is, you know, we can put whatever we want in land use, but if a project doesn't pencil out and people don't want to live there, it's not going to get built. So
you started your meeting with the comment, you know, we need to embrace density in this county.
Yes.
And so this is a big step toward that.
All right. So any additional comments? Because I think, John, thank you for bringing that up. I think that this was very valuable because it's brought us back to what this meeting is about, and I'm about to summarize. Unless, are there any other comments on this? What I'm going to suggest based on this is that we will propose to, on the entire rail corridor, that we will, on commercial property on the entire rail corridor, we will change, we'll basically expand Geller Amendment to that you can add residential on commercial. And additionally, say, on all rail corridors and stations, the city has the ability, but not the requirement, to include residential zoning and land use in the high density residential.
Perfect.
Everybody agree on that? Okay. Is there anything else that anybody wants to bring up on land use in general for only for purposes of increasing density? If there's anything else, now would be a good time to bring it up. If not, you can bring it up at our next meeting. If we have it, I may end up canceling the next meeting. Yes.
Yes, I have a question, and I don't know the answer. I'm just wondering how much industrial land is in the rail corridor.
I can tell you
because
that
I think industrial land is a very valuable land also.
Yes, I can tell you that there was a comprehensive study on that done by Randy DeShazo, your deputy director. Yes. In the report, Randy did a study of warehouses, and there is a tremendous number of warehouses on the rail corridors, and the average age of those was like 70 or 80 years?
I think so. Well past the write-off period.
It's just that I remember a presentation once by Dr. Murray, and when it was at FIU, and it was just really talking about how valuable industrial land is.
Yes.
And how it's being flipped at a greater and greater rate. So I just think that needs to be part of the thinking process of how much industrial land are you willing to lose, right, changing it into another land use.
Well, that's a good point, because a lot of, you know, the reason that there's so many warehouses by the rail corridors is because you want to use those. But do remember that 216.4 doesn't permit you to eliminate the commercial or industrial use. It just permits you to add residential to it. So you would not, if you have two floors of warehouse or a floor of warehouse, you could theoretically do residential on top of that, although most people don't really want to live on top of a warehouse. They don't mind living on top of a restaurant, but, you know, it's, you know, permissive. I'm sorry? It's probably quieter than a lot of the bars and restaurants we know.
I've got one comment.
Beep, beep, beep.
Yes. So, you know, we're talking about, you know, more and more density, which I hope is a little bit more intelligent, to be honest. And infrastructure, I think, is kind of getting passed over on all this. We've got $9 billion being built in Fort Lauderdale right now. $9 billion under construction and planning, which is huge. But I don't see anything about the infrastructure, especially pedestrians. We're the most dangerous city in the USA, right up there. And we got all these buildings you can't really walk to. So it would really help out the landlords, people that live there, you know, some green space. TDRs could save some green space. There's some ideas, but I don't see anybody working on that part of it. The density, yes, that's going gangbusters.
The city commission is, I mean, they, all of the, under state law, the infrastructure has to pay for itself. You need to talk with your city commissioners if they are putting in the infrastructure, because they have the money to.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's one of those, oh, it's the county's fault. Oh, it's the city's fault. Oh, the county does the plans. Oh, this is an MPO. So our transportation mobility just doesn't get it done, I hate to say. And it's critical for our downtown with this much density. So I don't know if you can do anything,
about,
but you're...
If you're talking about water and sewer and things
like that. No, I'm really talking about more pedestrian and walkability. And, you know, slow cars down in certain areas. It's only a 1 mile by half mile rectangle that $9 billion is going into. So that area should be more, you can walk your dog, you can walk your kid, you can go to the store. It's a no-brainer, but nothing's being done.
How is it not walkable right now? I mean, I walk to breakfast every weekend from my house in Rio Vista to Top Hat. Fun.
Well,
nice.
I just saw a report.
In the shade.
Yeah.
Three people were killed on US 1 in the last 2 years riding bikes, and I never seen anybody ride a bike on US 1. So, you know, we're one of the deadliest in the United States.
I have my own opinions on bikes, which are pretty well known, that I don't think, I have never supported closing lanes of traffic for to add bike lanes, because bikes are not an effective form. They're recreational. They are great exercise. I keep careful track of all the bicycle riders that I see when I drive in from my house in Cooper City to here. Might be one or two a week, Monday through Friday during business hours. Mm-hmm. On weekends, I see hundreds of them in packs wearing spandex or Lycra, but it's not transit. And
right, you can't really do it.
Right.
But I'll give another example. Northeast 3rd Avenue and the train tracks. I've got hundreds of people a night walking to our bar from Flagler, our restaurant, and there's no sidewalk, no crosswalk, there's nothing. So dangerous, it's unbelievable. I've seen kids fall on the tracks, school kids going there. I've been at it for 14 years, and I can't get the city or the county. The county's working on it, but my God, it's taking them 8 years. So it's a high priority.
Mm-hmm.
They want to do this, but I don't think they have the people to do it, the engineers. So that's a county one.
Boy, do we have engineers. All right. Anything else that anybody wants to discuss, Glenn Juicy? Going. Gone. Thank you for being here. And I'll let you know whether or not we're having our meeting on May 12th or not, which may not be necessary. Oops. You didn't know about that either, did you? Okay. Right. Okay. So we'll see. All right. Yes. Thank you. I'll let you know by tomorrow if the status of the meeting. Thank you for being here.